Have you ever wondered why politicians often fail to deliver on their campaign promises? Why electoral shifts fall short when moving policy? It's the Overton Window at Work. The idea coined by the Mackinac Center's Joe Overton describes the range of ideas that are politically acceptable at any time. And on the Overton Window podcast, we follow ideas as they move from being unthinkable to plausible to policy and talk to the people who change what is possible in politics. It is a big country, and we're not all going to agree. My guests today are trying to ensure that we can respect each other, even as we disagree. And they've just published the Civility Book. Please welcome, welcome Stephen Henderson and Nolan Findlay.
Thanks, James.
Yeah.
What's your book about?
So I think in the simplest terms, our book is about how Nolan and I have managed over 18 years now not to bludgeon each other to death, despite the fact that we disagree on just about everything. We've been arguing and discussing policy and politics for all of that time, and despite the fact that we really get into it when we have those discussions, we also have been figuring out how not to have that damage the friendship that has also been built over those 18 years. And if you think about the things that we're struggling with right now in our city, in our state, in our country, this is near the top of the list, that ability to have civil discourse about the things that we can't come to agreement on. And so we wrote a book to try to help other people do what we are trying to do.
So how do you have civil disagreement?
Well, we first want to start with a little explanation of what we're trying to do here. We are not trying to get people to agree to disagree. I mean, that's what you hear when most often when people of opposite opinions come together and start clanking. We say, well, we want you to agree to disagree. We want people to disagree and find value in the disagreement, because we do believe a functioning democracy requires healthy dissent and the ability to have discourse over your conflict points. We don't want people avoiding each other. We want you to engage and find a way to have productive conversations across the political divide. And, we offer in the book a number of tips for doing that, and some of the ways that we've managed to keep things from headed south in our own relationship. And we do think it's possible. We just think, a lot of people are scared to try today, or they're afraid to try because it's such a fraught process. This idea of expressing yourself and maybe expressing ideas that put you at risk a little bit. And, we want people to get beyond that and be able to engage in a meaningful way.
Well, so I am kind of curious about that, because in the book you mentioned that you're not changing each other's mind.
No.
We're not even trying.
So if it's not about persuasion, what do you get out of civil discourse?
Well, a lot, actually. I mean, because it's not about persuasion. We're not trying to convert. I think everybody who's been in one of these conversations with someone on the other side of the political divide understands the futility of trying to change somebody's mind. Most people hold their ideas pretty firmly, and their beliefs they're fairly committed to. We seem to think the only two choices are to either fight or avoid. And we think, and we've managed to have very meaningful, productive conversations without converting each other, without trying to convert each other. There is value in the disagreement, as I said, up top. And every time Steve and I engage, I learn something. And one of the pillars that we feel of civility is to set honest goals for your engagements. And one of those goals is to see what you can learn from the other side, see what you can take away of value, rather than just sitting there and preaching for whatever time you're together, you know, trying to pound your beliefs into their head. That's a very unpleasant process. And it's one reason people don't engage today. I mean, because who wants to sit there and listen to somebody, you know, scream at them for an hour? And so, you know, we go back and forth, and sometimes very loudly and sometimes very angrily. But when we walk away, when we walk away, we have a greater understanding of the issue, and we've tested our beliefs, our ideas against another person's who hold different perspective. And there's considerable value in that.
Steve, can you kind of explain, like, give me an instance of like what you got out of a conversation with Nolan?
Well, you know, it actually happens all the time. The most recent argument we had where I got something out of it was actually about Social Security, which is, you know, an issue that people are talking about right now and debating. We were Nolan and I were out together at the bar drinking bourbon, which is another kind of common bonding experience for the two of us. We like to do that. And someone asked us, they said, you know, you guys have to disagree about Social Security. So let's talk about that. And we did. And we, of course, don't agree, I think, on a lot of things about Social Security. But Nolan said something during that conversation that I hadn't heard him say before and that I hadn't really thought of before. And he asked the question about, you know, lifespan, expected lifespan for African-Americans, for instance, being shorter than for white Americans. And he said, so basically, if you're a black person in this country, you are paying into a system that is supporting other people much more than it's supporting you and your communities. Like, why shouldn't we be thinking about it from the standpoint of allowing people to keep more of that in their own communities, in their own households, in their own families, as a possible return? I'm not sure I agree with that approach, but it was a way to think about it that I hadn't really stopped to think about before. And I think, you know, I think we can go back and forth for a long time, the two of us talking about those instances, those kind of aha moments where somebody whose beliefs you don't subscribe to says something that nonetheless makes you think about your position. It doesn't make you think differently, just it makes you think in a different way about the issue.
That's really interesting. I also think it kind of reflects something that because you guys have spoken with each other, you know what each other care about. And right. So if you're talking about a contentious issue, you can say, well, I know you care about this. Well, have you thought about this in this issue? And so that requires careful listening, experience, and understanding in order to have something that is productive and something to chew on.
Yeah.
And yeah. James.
So that's nice.
James, it really starts with dropping your assumptions about another person and their beliefs. We tend to hear, oh, good, James Holman, he's a conservative, so he's this, 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 and this. And you may not be any of those things. But we...
I try not even calling myself a conservative.
So we allow ourselves to fill in information gaps with assumptions. And what we urge as a first step in this book is for people to fill those gaps with knowledge, sit down and talk to each other. We sort of have a driving principle here that all good people come to their beliefs in the same way. They take the information, the data available, they run them through the filters of their own experiences, their own personal values, and they come up with an opinion. If it's different than yours, different than mine, doesn't make them evil, doesn't make them sinister, doesn't mean they're out to destroy you or do you harm. They've just lived a different life. And we feel like it's important for people to sit down and understand what those experiences were, what those values are, and then start the engagement rather than going in thinking, oh my gosh, you know, I believe I know everything there is to know about this person.
And it's really tough to have a productive conversation with someone if your default assumption is that a disagreement is caused by a moral failure on their side.
Sure, sure.
And worse, James, it's easier to hate them. And that's where we've gotten in our society today. We believe they're all these things, so we hate them. And,
Nolan and I also will sometimes get into it in a way that is not particularly productive and is angry. You asked about examples where we make each other think differently. I can think just as easily of examples where mm-hmm. we just had to separate because it was too ugly. There was a discussion we had about immigration after the presidential election last year. This was on the show that the two of us host together on DBS, and we got into it so badly that we went way over time. We were saying horrible things to each other, and the station decided not to even air the conversation. It was so bad. I think we were both embarrassed after we were done. But no, that's okay. I mean, sometimes we get into it in a way that causes us to have to say, all right, well, this is maybe something we need to talk about later. And that's all right, too. It is a constant sort of calibration, I guess, of how to interact with each other. And there's a broad spectrum of ways that we do that. And they all kind of work out.
And James, if I could just tell just a little story about that, I think sums up this project and the book, really. And this story is in the book. But Steve and I were up on Mackinac Island years ago for the Republican Party policy conference, which they have every 2 years. And so we were up there both covering it for our respective papers. I was with the news, Detroit News, Steve with the Free Press. And, you know, we got done with our work and walked down to one of the bars downtown, and we're sitting there having a drink. And I get up to use the bathroom, and I'm walking across the floor, and these two ladies pounce on me, which doesn't really happen to me often in bars. And I knew them. They were conservative women who ran a website that was all about, you know, demonizing Barack Obama. And so they seemed just very agitated. And they said, "Nolan, is that Steve Henderson you're drinking with?" And I said, "Yes." And they said, "Is he a friend of yours?" And I said, "Well, he is." And they said, "Oh, he is so awful. We just hate him." And I asked them, I said, "You hate him?" And they said, "Yes." I said, "Do you know him?" They said, "Well, no, we don't know him. Have you ever talked to him?" "No, no, no." And so I just pointed toward my stool and said, "It's empty. Why don't you go over there and talk to him in a few minutes?" Now, I had no idea how this was going to work out, but I thought he'd be fun to watch. And so they went over and sat down with Steve and started engaging, started talking. And, I was standing across the room watching, and I noticed it was very, very collegial. I mean, they were not getting angry. They were not getting loud. There was no fingers being pointed, but they were talking, and they talked on and on and on. And so, you know, after quite a while of this, I went over and I thought, well, I'm going to rescue Steve. And as I'm walking away with these ladies, I said, "What do you think?" And he said, "Oh, he's so wonderful. We just love him." And I thought to myself, you know, an hour of conversation, nothing about Steve changed, nothing about them changed in terms of their beliefs. What had happened was they'd taken the time to get to know each other and understand each other. And even though they didn't reach any sort of agreement, they built the respect it takes, I think, to have a foundation of civility.
Yeah, that's it's an interesting story because it's when you read words, it seems like it's much easier to disrespect the person who wrote them. Yes. But when you talk to someone face to face, it is much harder. Harder. It's just one of these default things about technology, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. It's probably why social media is often so incivil.
Yeah.
I want to talk about some of the practical things that you cover in the book, because you just need to get practice having civil discussions. Like, it's the only way you get better at it. The only way you get more out of a conversation is getting practice with it. And you mentioned on like the immigrate, I'm talking about immigration. You guys just like you couldn't continue this conversation. But one of your pillars is to keep coming back.
Right.
A good debate will give you something to chew on and some time afterwards to reflect after an initial emotional interchange. What are some examples of where coming back has advanced your conversations?
Well, I think on affirmative action early on when we were in the early years of our engagement, I mean, I had a fairly typical conservative view that, we're a meritocracy now and all's forgiven, and everything's on a level field. And, and hearing Steve's stories and talking about his experiences, it changed my position a bit in terms of, it's okay to say, yeah, everybody's equal now, but the idea of catch up and coming to a place where everybody's truly at the same spot takes a lot more than just declaring, okay, it's all going to be from merit from here on out, because there are too many years and too many centuries, I guess, when that wasn't the case. And so it caused me to think a little differently about that issue and how, perhaps this idea of meritocracy and also catching up, making up, can come together, coexist.
What are some of the other pillars of civility you talk about?
Well, we mentioned dropping assumptions, and we think that's you can't go anywhere until you do that. And then we talked about setting honest goals for your conversation. And again, honest goal is not to try to convert. And then listening, as you mentioned earlier, and as Steve talks very eloquently about.
Yeah, no, we talk about listening, we use that word differently, I think, than most of us use it in our everyday lives. Most of us would say if we're not talking and allowing the other person to talk, well, that means we're listening. But I think if we unpack that a little more, often that's not the case. We're talking about actually making an investment in what the other person is saying and their ideas. I've got a couple tests that I use on myself for when I'm listening. One is, when Nolan's done saying what he's saying, could I repeat back to him what he just said, maybe not word for word, but certainly in good faith, reflect his point of view. And then the other is about, questions. When I'm really listening to somebody, I'm actually curious about what they're saying, and I want to know more. Maybe they said something I didn't quite catch. Maybe they said something that I hadn't heard before. I want to keep going with what they're saying as much as I want to say what I have to say. And I also think that there's something about our language, the interrogative form of our language, that is more welcoming than the declarative form. It says to somebody, I am curious about you and your ideas. I do care what you think, even if I don't agree and I'm not going to agree. And so that signaling is also an important part of the listening process. And it's harder to do those things than I think most of us think it is. But I think if you consciously think that way, it's possible.
Go ahead.
You mentioned the persistence pillar too, which is the final one we talk about. And that encompasses a lot of things. One, it encompasses perspective. And we ask people to keep things in perspective. We know Steve and I were to suddenly come to agreement on everything. For one thing, I'd have to see if the world had not fallen off its axis. But for the other, nothing would change in that world. We ask people to ask themselves, why is it so important that everyone in your life whom you're able to have a meaningful relationship with, that's dependent on them sharing your political views? Why is that sort of unanimity of thought so important? We believe, this country and our system depends on a healthy back and forth and a healthy dissenting discourse. But we seem to have no room in our lives for people who don't feel exactly the way we do. And we've seen that that's broken up relationships at every level, personal relationships, family relationships. I think we all have stories of people in our families, our, you know, people we're supposed to love who we can't be around, won't be around us because we don't think exactly the way we do. And, you know, so that that perspective idea. And also, you know, mind your the manner of your discourse. Steve and I get very heated sometimes. And as he said, sometimes we get embarrassed ourselves. But one thing we've never done is made it personal. We've never said, you're a blank. And we think words matter. And if you can control yourself and keep from going personal in a conversation, it's always much more productive.
Yeah.
So I do want to talk about passion in the debate, because I think you're absolutely right about it. But I want to come back to something that Stephen said that I thought was very interesting. I want to see if I can recapsulate, which is the interrogative form is more conversational, or at least helps you listen more than the Yeah. So, and that is like, if you ask a good question, you will list, you will, you're going to be more open to hearing their response.
Yes. Yeah. 100%. I mean, I think there is something about just the act of asking people questions that A, leads to better information, but also leads to a more collegial exchange of ideas, right? I mean, that's what we're lost, I think, in discourse in this country, is the exchange of ideas, not just the expression of those ideas in a discussion, right? I tell you what I think, you tell me what you think, but the idea of us trading ideas and playing off of those ideas really requires that interrogative form more than the declarative form. And if you think about the ways in which we're having these discussions right now, like on social media, on the 24-hour news stations, I mean, think of how few genuine questions people are asking each other. Everyone is just saying what they think, and then, you know, insulting the people who think differently, as opposed to asking them questions about, well, why do you think that? Or where did you get that information? You know, if I want to know more about that, where might I look? Where, the, you know, the place that you're getting this information. It's just a different way of coming to not just a, is not coming to agreement, but coming to an understanding about where we all stand and why, which is the sort of essence of what we're trying to get people to do.
How would America be different if we were more civil to each other?
Well, I think in almost every way. I mean, and we're not looking at a passive society. We think there are times when we should be angry and we should be loud. And I mean, but that's been since our beginnings, right? I mean, that's how we started as a people. I think there are, what's changed now is that there are so many forces that profit from our division and from our hatred. So whether it's the media or social media or cable television or our political parties, if you listen to the language of our political debate, it's all about fighting. I'm going to fight for you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, who are you fighting? I wrote a column recently that, you know, I don't want to vote for anybody anymore who promises to be a fighter. I want to vote for somebody who promises to, you know, go to Washington or go to Lansing and work together on my behalf. You know, don't fight for me. And I think that language of our political discourse has caused a lot of this division. But there also is, again, a lot of profit in keeping us afraid of one another. People fear they're going to lose their audience, going to lose control of their caucus or what have you if people talk to each other in a civil, productive manner. And I think we've got to stop rewarding those folks or those interests who are so determined to keep us apart. But you know, we've got a lot of problems we're not solving, a lot of things we can't agree on, and we're not talking about the serious issues and the existential threats, you know, to our way of life. We're just screaming at each other. And so we think everything would be different if folks could sit down and engage civilly and find a path. I mean, one of the things we write about in this civility book is that, you know, we want the same things. Now, we don't agree on much of anything policy-wise, but outcomes, we agree on the outcomes we want. We want a more prosperous country and community. We want a more equitable society. We want our children to do well, and we want our communities to thrive. We want opportunity for everybody. It's the path for getting there that we disagree with and gone. And, you know, once you understand that you want to get to the same place, it takes some of the tension out of the discussion of how to get there.
Stephen, it looked like you wanted to add something to that.
Yeah. Nolan and I did this exercise about 10 years ago, for StoryCorps, which is an NPR program that collects American stories about relationships. You go and sit in a little Winnebago across the table from each other for an hour and talk. And Nolan and I went to do that and told each other our stories, why we thought the things that we thought, what things we'd experienced that led us to believe the things that that we believed, and the art of doing that, the act of doing that, really revealed for both of us these much deeper understanding of where the other person's coming from. And we'd known each other for 10 years when we did this, but there was stuff that came out in that conversation that neither of us knew about each other. Taking that time to really understand why and how somebody believes the things that they believe is the way that you get to the place where you can have these conversations. And there's so much of that that's missing in our politics right now. We tried really hard to get folks in Lansing to do this exercise or something like it a few years ago, just for the new people who were coming in. And the leadership, one part of the leadership at least, said they didn't want to do it because they were afraid that they would have less control over their caucus if they knew if their members knew the other caucus that way. There's so much of our politics that depends on this estrangement and misunderstanding, purposeful misunderstanding of what the other side is about.
That is, you're speaking to my own experience because, right now, especially in some of the issues that I work on, like there are a lot of stuff that people across the ideological spectrum can support and would agree with. Mm-hmm. And it's been frustrating that we're not making progress on these things because it's like, look, you're going, these things up, this is up your alley. This is we can work together on this thing. A lot of them are your standard concentrated benefits, dispersed costs kind of problems. And I do think that if we practice more civility, the more attention can be paid to these issues because we're talking about things where we can agree on and make some progress rather than treating our opposition as obstacles to be overcome rather than neighbors to be persuaded.
Yeah.
And that's it. And that's it. James, one thing here is, you know, partisanship is at the root of a lot of our problems. We are more now loyal to a political party rather than a set of principles. And that's created a winner-take-all attitude that can't compromise. You've got to win 100% of the argument and then try to hold on to what you've gained until the next election when somebody else wins and they reverse everything you did. And mm-hmm. so this idea of all or nothing, I can't come to any kind of middle ground. We've got the power, so we're going to force our agenda through. And we keep lurching back and forth, election to election, policy-wise. And I think it's damaged our country economically and in every possible way.
Well, thank you all for that one. I think it's important to practice civility. I think if we can be able to talk with each other better, I think it's going to do a lot to open the Overton Window.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Overton Window, a podcast from the Mackinac Center. Please subscribe and rate. For more, check us out at www.mackinac.org. That's Mackinac with a C, like the island.